Nick DiGilio here. Yeah, we are live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of Trib Tower. And, yeah, we're here till midnight. Eric Childress is with us. And we've only had one major movie that opened this weekend. It was I, Frankenstein, and evidently nobody went to see it. So Eric is running down all the movies that he saw at Sundance. We'll get a chance to see a lot of these movies in the coming weeks and months. And Eric is giving us an exclusive look at some of the great stuff and some of the bad stuff that he saw at Sundance. All right, Eric, let's get back to it, man.
Yeah, continue to try and just concentrate on the good stuff, since that's what people really want to hear about.
Yeah.
And sticking with sequels, here's one that I know you want to hear about, The Raid 2.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, well, we know how crazy the first one was. Very simple story, you know, the raid that takes place, and they basically, cops have to go from the bottom of a penthouse, you know, the bottom of an apartment complex to the top and fight off, you know, 800 bad guys and kill everyone in the process. A crazy film directed by Gareth Evans, and now he's expanded his budget. So the second part of what he's hoping will be a trilogy, and it follows the hero of the first movie in a film that is now almost 2.5 hours. Okay, 2.5 hours, and it'd be nice to say that this movie was wall-to-wall action for 2.5 hours, as exhausting as that might have been.
Uh-huh.
But this film really does sort of expanded by really creating a really complex sort of, or not so complex crime story. There's a lot of talky filler in between the action scenes in here. And so it's a little more stop and start than the first one was.
Mm-hmm.
But when the thing starts, hold on.
Yeah.
Just seriously hold on. I mean, Gareth Evans really, I mean, the action sequences are just stellar. I mean, the rest of the movie could just be, you know, the worst stuff imaginable, and you would still manage to find, you know, to have a good time watching the action sequences. And there's plenty of it in the movie. I mean, as much talk as there is in the first half of this movie, there's still like 4 action sequences that are going to, you know, knock you back in your seat.
Yeah.
And then there's the last sort of 40 minutes of the movie is pretty close to wall-to-wall action. There's you know, some wrap-up of the plot going on, but a lot of it is at the service of the action sequences. There's a kitchen fight in this movie that's only one-on-one, but it rivals the three-way fight that we saw in the first movie.
Yeah, man.
Okay?
Man.
So, yeah. So this is, I mean, this is, you know, anyone who's a fan of the first one should be a fan of this one. I don't think this one is as good because, like I said, it is, you know, we're talking like, you know, another 40, you know, maybe like 50 minutes longer, and most of that is just talk.
Yeah.
So if you've seen, you know, a number of, you know, sort of Asian action movies in the past, this one's more in those lines, but the action sequences are second to none.
Okay. March 28th, by the way, is when it's set to open here in Chicago.
Yeah.
I loved the first movie. It just blew me out of the way. I mean, it just blew me away. I couldn't believe it. And as I've said before, when I was watching it, I was like, well, that guy's dead.
Yeah.
They just killed a guy.
Rumors. I didn't stick around for the Q&A afterwards, but there are rumors that someone didn't make it.
Seriously,
yeah.
Serious. There were scenes in the raid. The first, I'm like, that guy's neck just broke. I don't know how the hell he didn't break his neck. It's just it is a mind blowing movie. The Raid.
I mean, when you really get the sense when there really is sort of a special effect at work sometimes.
Yeah.
But very rarely. I mean, it's like 4 out of 5 shots. It looks like someone hit their head on the cement.
I mean, just
hard.
It's ridiculous, man.
Yeah.
All right, I can't wait. The Raid 2 opens at the end of March. All right, what else?
Mm-hmm. Okay, how about the new film from the guys that brought you You're Next?
Oh, yeah, man.
Okay, this is the latest film from Adam Wingard and writer Simon Barrett. It's called The Guest.
Okay.
And it's the story of a guy from the military on leave, and he comes to the family of one of his fallen comrades, and he just wants to sort of let him know, you know, that he was, you know, the son was thinking about him when he died, and the family, you know, obviously is so emotionally overwhelmed that they invite him to stay in the house. Well, he might not exactly be who he appears to be, because it's a very sort of classic you know, type of story like this, where, you know, the sort of the charming stranger comes into the house and it looks like he's helping out the family in different ways. He helps out the young son with bullies at school. He helps the daughter with her sort of, cheating boyfriend, stuff like that. You know, dad's got some problems at work. So, like, he's solving all these problems left and right. But at the same time, who's Lance Reddick from The Wire?
Yeah, that's Daniels.
Daniels. Okay. Yeah. You know all the names.
Cedric Daniels, yeah.
There you go. Well, he's a guy that was apparently in charge of something going on in the Army.
Okay.
And this character, Dan Stevens is the actor's name, he was involved in it somehow. And so the movie sort of keeps you a little off balance as to exactly who are the good guys and who are the bad guys.
Uh-huh.
And for the first hour, for like the first 70, 75 minutes, it really, really works. It's a lot of fun. It's funny. There's really some great violence in it. The last 20 minutes get a little routine for my taste.
Okay.
It becomes more sort of the standard stalker type movie.
Okay.
And it seemed like they could have done a lot more with the climax. But it's still good enough for a recommendation.
All right. Cool. I loved Your Next. I just thought it was terrific. So I'm really looking forward to this one too. All right, cool. The Guest. Anybody pick that one up or?
Not yet. But I'm sure it will. That seems like it'll probably get picked up from Magnolia or IFC.
All right,
something.
Cool.
They seem to have deals with those guys. So we'll see.
All right, cool. All right, that's all right. What's next?
Okay, well, here's another horror film that did just get picked up today by IFC.
Okay,
and it's called The Babadook.
The what?
The Babadook.
The Babadook.
The Babadook.
Uh-huh. All
yeah.
Right.
Well, it's an Australian horror film about a woman and her son. Her husband was killed on the way to the hospital to deliver the son. 6 years later, the kid has a very hyperactive imagination. He likes to build weapons at home. He's that kind of kid,
mm-hmm.
in a fun way. And the mother is still sort of dealing with the grief of, not having the father around. She works at a daycare, a nursing home center. And so this might be a little off balance, just a little bit, because the kid is always in her face. But there's a storybook, of course, in the house called Mr. Babadook.
Okay.
And Mr. Babadook, he's a very nefarious-looking, shadowy-type creature. And, of course, she reads the book to the kid, and next thing you know, there are loud knocks happening all around the house. Yeah, so this movie is, it's a very sort of traditional, old-fashioned monster movie with the possible hint that maybe the mother's sort of psyche is very fragile and starting to fail on her, that, maybe, what's real, what's not. But this movie is very much in the vein of The Conjuring, in that it's a lot of fun. It's smart. The performances are really good, and it's really, really, really creepy.
Cool.
Yeah. So this is a fun little film. IFC just picked it up, so that means it'll probably end up on demand, maybe a small theatrical release.
Yeah.
But it's definitely worth checking out because it's certainly the best of the midnight features that they had there, at least the ones that I saw.
Directed by a woman, which is cool.
Yes.
Jennifer
yes.
Kent, she's an Australian actress who was in Babe, Pig in the City.
Yes.
And
yes.
So
her feature debut is based on a short that she made in 2005, I think.
Yeah.
And she's got a really great sense. It's a really well-directed and acted film.
Good, man. That's cool. The Babadook. Mm-hmm. All right. IFC picked it up, so we'll be seeing that one.
Mm-hmm.
All right. One more before we break here, Eric.
One more before we break. Well, we might as well go with another revenge story.
Okay.
This one's called Blue Ruin. And this is a film that's played a few festivals. It played Toronto. It actually played Chicago last year. But I finally caught up with it here at Sundance. And it's the story of this homeless guy who discovers that the guy that killed his family many years ago is being let out of jail. So he fixes up his car, stalks the guy. And this leads to a chain of events that basically leads him having to defend his life and defend the remaining members of his family from this guy and the rest of his family who have impacted their lives. It's a really straightforward revenge story with a lot of great quality kills in it, and it's really just fun. Because it's kind of unexpected. It's got the slow burn quality to it, but when it hits home really hard, and it's really a lot of fun.
Okay,
Blue Ruin.
Blue Ruin, by the way, and it's scheduled to open April 25th.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at the cast list. Jan from the Brady Bunch is in this.
She is.
Eve Plum.
That's
what it says.
I didn't even recognize. I was too busy recognizing because one of the guys in the film is. Devin Rattray,
uh-huh.
who is one of the two cousins in Nebraska. Yeah, and he's got another great role in here.
Well, she plays her character. I don't know if this is helpful to you.
Okay.
She plays Chris Cleland.
Well, there are only a handful of women in the movie, so yeah. She's not his sister. So if she's one of the other two women that I think she is, yeah, you're gonna enjoy that.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Cool. All right then. Okay, let's take a quick break. Eric, hold on a second, and when we come back, we got more with Eric, getting exclusive previews of some of these new movies that we're going to be seeing that Eric saw at the Sundance Film Festival, which is one of the most popular film festivals in the world. And Eric always gives us full reports about these. And if you have questions or comments, it's 312-981-7200. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Studios here until midnight. And Eric Childress is with me. And he and Colin Suter always join me on Saturday nights to review all the movies. Colin is taking the week off, but he'll be back next week with Eric. And we'll review all the new movies next week. Well, right now we're concentrating on all the films that Eric saw at the Sundance Film Festival. And we'll get to see a lot of these movies in the coming weeks and months. And Eric's giving us an exclusive preview of some of these cool movies that he saw at Sundance. So, all right, Eric, let's continue.
Okay. Well, if someone were to ask me what I would remember about how I would classify this year's Sundance, I would tell them that it's the year where it was a very good year for ex-SNL cast members.
Okay.
The first film on the list is called Obvious Child, and this one stars Jenny Slate, who is only on SNL, I believe, only for one season.
Yeah, and she also has the distinction of the first night of her her show, she dropped the F-bomb.
Was that her first night?
It was her first show, man.
Because I referenced that in my review of the movie, but I didn't think that. I thought that was later in the season.
No, it was her first. Well, she was a mid-season replacement.
Oh, okay.
Somebody got canned. It was what's her face from Enlightened? Michaela Watkins.
Oh, okay.
She got fired, and they brought in Jenny Slate. That's why it seemed later, but it was because she was a mid-season replacement cast member, and she dropped the F-bomb in her first sketch.
Yeah. Whoops. Okay.
Yeah.
Well. You know, not that that's not great and all.
Yeah. But also, Eric, I want to mention the unbelievable work that she's done on Parks and Rec.
Oh, unbelievable.
Oh,
terrific.
My God, is she funny on that show.
So funny.
So
and
hilarious.
Hello, Ladies.
Yeah,
too.
She's great. She's great.
Yeah, she's terrific. Yeah. And this is the movie that, if there's any justice, is the moment she becomes a star.
Mm.
And the movie's called Obvious Child, and she plays, you know, seemingly someone probably not unlike herself, a female stand-up comic, works a small club in New York. Very, very obsessed with being very frank in sort of a Sarah Silverman type way about her relationships and her body and stuff like that. She does, you know, some stuff on stage that gets her broken up from her boyfriend. Boyfriend doesn't like what she says. He breaks up with her, sends her off into a spiral. She ends up meeting a nice guy. I'm drawing a blank on his name, but he was on the last couple seasons of The Office. He was one of the new temps.
Oh, okay.
Jake Lacy, yes. Meets a nice guy from Vermont. They have a one-night stand, and a few weeks later, she notices that, well, she's pregnant. And if you read people's reviews of this movie, the two words that tend to pop up when describing it is abortion comedy. And that's it's accurate, but it's also unfair because it makes it sound like it's something that's just going to go for, you know, pure shock value.
Right.
It's not. It's actually a very funny, a very thoughtful piece about, you know, a woman put in a position, you know, not unlike a lot of people, you know, in movies like this. The sort of the choices that she has to make, you know, is she going, you know, she's very clear that she's not going to keep the baby, but then it's that, you know, maybe she should, you know, should she pursue this relationship and all these things. And Jenny Slate is so good in this movie. I mean, the comedy seems to just come natural
sure.
to her. But you would not really expect going into it the dramatic beats that she hits so well in the film. I mean, it's only like 80 minutes long. It's a real sort of breakthrough moment for Jenny Slate.
Oh, good, man. I love her. She's just great.
Mm-hmm.
Obvious Child, did it get picked up, do you know?
Yes, it did get picked up by A24.
Oh, cool.
They gave us Spring Breakers and Spectacular Now.
All right, cool. That's outstanding.
Yeah.
All right, so
mm-hmm.
Obvious Child with Jenny Slate. It's a star-making performance for her.
Yeah.
Now you said SNL, more SNL cast members?
Yes.
All right.
And this one is called The Skeleton Twins.
Okay.
And this is Bill Hader and Kristen Wiig.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And in the film, they play, they play twins, twin brother and sister, who are also suicidal. And as the movie opens, Bill Hader's character is nearly successful with his suicide. He's gay, and he comes to live with Kristen Wiig to sort of help him through his rehabilitation. She's married to Luke Wilson in the film, he's sort of the very sort of upbeat, like, you know, the kind of guy from like Seinfeld that will just wants to climb a mountain. He's that guy.
Okay.
In the movie. I heard not unlike what he played in Enlightened, I was told.
Okay. As far as I'm concerned, his strongest work.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, I'll say this. This is the strongest work Bill Hader and Kristen Wiig have done on screen.
Oh, my God, man.
Period.
Oh, my God. I mean, that's saying a lot.
It really is. I mean, Bridesmaids, I mean, it's definitely a comedy drama. You know, this is not laugh-a-minute Bridesmaids type stuff.
Yeah.
But the two of them are so perfectly matched. They clearly have the chemistry between them, and to channel that into a brother-sister relationship that's not just funny, but also that just rings true.
Yeah.
This is a real, real sort of, you know, next step in their evolution, especially Hader, who, you know, has done a lot of supporting work on screen. This is a true starring role for him. And there's you're going to hear a lot of people say that it has the best lip syncing scene in film history.
Okay.
I dare you to find one that's better.
Okay.
Seriously, between the two of them, it's beautiful. It's funny. There's like tension in it. It has dark stuff in the movie, but ultimately you're going to come out feeling really good about the two of them. And Luke Wilson, I think the best thing he's done since Royal Tenenbaums.
Okay.
On screen. And it's a small role, but he's really funny. The Skeleton Twins was picked up by Lionsgate and Roadside, so you'll be seeing that sometime this year.
Cool.
It was my favorite narrative film of the festival.
Okay. The Skeleton Twins with Kristen Wiig and Bill Hader. Ty Burrell is also in it, and Luke Wilson. All right. That sounds great, man.
Yeah.
That's good to hear. It is two of my favorite people, I got to tell
you.
Yeah. All right, Eric, hang on, all right?
Yes.
All right. Eric Childress is with us, telling us about the great movies from the that he saw at the Sundance Film Festival. We will continue with more on 720 WGN. Yes. Hey, all right. It's Nick DiGilio. We are here until midnight tonight. And the very lovely Amy Guth will be coming in for Red Eye Remix at midnight. So stay tuned for that. Eric Childress is joining me. Colin is taking the week off, but Eric and Colin will be back with me next week to review all the new movies. But Eric is concentrating now on all the films that he saw at Sundance. He saw 25 films in 5 days, so we're recounting some of the more memorable ones. Many of these movies we'll be seeing in the coming weeks and months, so you're getting like an exclusive preview of some really cool movies that played Sundance that we'll be playing here soon. Eric, welcome back, man.
Thank you.
All right, what do we got next?
Okay, another film that a lot of people are probably very curious about, certainly were at the festival. It's been 10 years since Zach Braff had Garden State.
God, has it been 10 years already?
It's been 10 years, man.
Jeez.
And he hasn't directed a film since. You know, you at Garden State was such a success at Sundance. Was, you know, certainly a very nice mild success at the box office.
Yeah.
You would have thought he would have just, you know, that would have just been it, that he would have just been directing for, you know, at least semi-regularly.
Yeah.
And he hasn't. And it took him to, you know, to help fund this
this was a Kickstarter thing, right?
By Kickstarter.
Right.
Yeah, which generated a lot of controversy, especially within the journalistic world. There was a lot of antagonism towards Braff for taking this approach and mm-hmm. getting money from fans and stuff like that. And he didn't. I mean, the film was only partially funded by Kickstarter, and the film was called "Wish I Was Here."
Okay.
And in the film, which he wrote and directed and stars in, Braff plays a father in his mid-30s, whose children go to Hebrew school that's funded by his father, played by Mandy Patinkin. When he finds out that the cancer has returned in his father, his father can no longer afford to send them to the school. So this leads him on sort of this spiritual journey with the kids, you know, the possibility of having to take them out of the school, possibly homeschooling them. And then, you know, exactly what, you know, is as a father are you trying to teach your children about the world? You know, what, you know, the realism, the fantasy, you know, how, you know, the spiritual, you know, spirituality can guide us on certain paths and whatnot. So it's kind of an ensemble piece in a way. I mean, Braff is certainly the center of it. Kate Hudson plays his wife. Actually, some of the best work she's done in a long time. Patinkin is really terrific. Josh Gad plays his brother on the film, who's also has an antagonistic relationship with the father. It's a hard film to describe in that sort of plot. Because it really has all these sort of dimensions that's going on for like the first hour of the movie, and when the movie finally sort of finds its setting, it's sort of in sync with how the character sort of finds his setting, exactly the direction and the path that he wants to take his kids on this journey, you know, towards, you know, what's eventually going to, you know, be the end of his relationship with his father. This is a very divided film at Sundance, mm-hmm. and I don't know how many of the haters, you know, really still have some of that residual Kickstarter stuff in them.
Yeah.
But I'm sure some of them did. I'm sure some of them legitimately didn't like the film. I thought the film was pretty great. It hit me on a certain level, some of the same ways that Garden State did. You can certainly see that he's covering some of the same territory, but he's taking it in different directions. The relationship with his father, stuff going on, you know, with his, you know, clearly the fun he's having as an actor and whatnot. And you know, I can see where some people will have a problem with the film because of the film. It certainly wears its emotions on its sleeve, but I think does so in a much more interesting way than I think some people are giving it credit for. I was a big fan of the film. It was my third favorite film at the festival. Actually, it hit me on a real emotional level by the end. So it's a very strong recommendation from me.
Okay, Wish I Was Here from Zach Braff. I noticed that Jim Parsons is in it.
Yes, he is.
Does he say, by the way, you have balls written on your face?
He does not.
Oh, okay.
He does not. I'm sorry to say he does not.
That, by the way.
He does share scenes with Braff. And also Michael Weston
is
in the film.
Yeah.
Who also had a small role in Garden State as the cop that pulls him over.
Right.
The film to me, right now, it's like 2 hours long. And it kind of feels like a first cut.
Yeah.
I think that they seem to rush it into Sundance. And I think that if he cuts one or two subplots completely out of the film
mm-hmm.
and trims a little bit, makes it about, you know, 100, 105 minutes, I think he'll have a much stronger.
Okay. Beat. All right, cool. Well, I'm obviously, you know, intrigued. I thought Garden State was great.
Yeah.
God, I can't believe it was 10 years ago. Then that means Sideways is 10 years old.
That's right. Our number one films of 2004.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was funny because like that basically it's interesting because I think that when we both chose, like I chose Sideways and you chose Garden State, I think that showed the difference in our age.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That there's a 10-year gap between us.
Yeah.
And it became obvious with the...
Yeah,
with,
those two films were very generational.
That's
in a way.
Right, man. Absolutely. Yeah. I was like, but, you know, Sideways, my reaction to Sideways was, you know, I was like, wow, when the movie was over, I'm like, hey, I'm middle-aged.
Yeah.
Yeah, middle-aged. All right. Yeah. okay. Okay. I Wish I Was Here. And by the way, that by the way, you have balls written on your face, is might be my favorite line in all of Garden State.
It's great.
Yeah,
it's great. And that was picked up by Focus, so you will be seeing that in theaters. That was one of the bigger deals of the festival. So
all right,
far.
Cool. All right, Wish I Was Here, Zach Braff's new one. All right, what else?
A film called Love is Strange. All I got to say is that it features the talents of John Lithgow and Alfred Molina. That should be enough to get you in the theater.
Yeah, man.
Right there.
Yeah.
You know, to see these two guys together in roles like this. They play gay lovers who have been together for some 39 years or something crazy. And they finally get married. And Alfred Molina, his character, conducts, he does like the choir at the local church, at the local school. And the church lets him go. Because of he finally gave in to the gay marriage, and so he's let go, and so therefore they live in New York, and the two of them are forced to basically have to give up their apartment and to sort of reach out to their families to basically put them up while they can find other jobs and other means of existence until they can find a place of their own. The pleasure of this film obviously is watching the two of them, and unfortunately, for most of the film, the two of them are apart because the families have to put them up in different locations. So you don't get to see as many scenes between the two of them as you'd like. The thing about the movie that struck me is that it's very, very New York.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like New York, kind of upper class white people problem type movie.
Yeah.
It's not, to call it even a gay love story is we're not talking Brokeback Mountain here.
Right.
The fact that they're gay is such a minor part of the movie. It's not even a thing that's about gay rights and gay marriage and that kind of stuff. This is really a story. The thing that I took away from it was the idea that, people who sort of say they respect gay marriage and they support, gay marriage, especially within their own family, that when it comes to just dealing with people, whether it be gay or straight, they're not as supportive.
Mm-hmm.
And so, gay or straight, you can drive, someone nuts just as easily.
Right.
Into whatever persuasion you go. But seeing the two of them together, there's a scene late together where they just have this, the scene in a bar together. It's just a pleasure watching these two pros, be with each other. And they have a real chemistry. And I wish that the movie was more about the two of them together as opposed to apart.
I understand. I see that Marissa Tomei is in it.
Yeah, she plays the wife of John Lithgow's nephew. She's married to his nephew.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and she's not the nicest person in the movie.
Okay.
Yes.
The last time Alfred Molina played part of a gay couple, it didn't turn out very well. It was prick up your ears. It was not a pleasant not a pleasant way for that relationship to end.
Yeah. This one's a little this one's a little slightly more pleasant.
Nobody gets bludgeoned to death in this. Oh man. All right, let's do one more before the break.
Okay, what else? I'm trying to look what I got here on the good side. A film called Imperial Dreams.
Okay.
Talk about. I think this is the last one on my good list.
Okay.
And it stars John Boyega, who was the lead kid in Attack the Block.
Oh, cool.
Okay.
All right.
And he plays a young black man. I believe it's in Los Angeles. Was released from prison, goes back home, at least to his uncle's house, where his son is staying. His wife or his girlfriend is also in jail. So he comes back home to take care of his son and to, be on the straight and narrow path and whatnot. Meanwhile, you have his cousin, is into the gang scene. His uncle is trying to get him to run some OxyContin across state lines.
Huh.
So it's another one of these stories of, the guy released from prison just trying to, keep it straight.
Yeah.
And so it clearly invites a lot of comparisons to Fruitvale Station. Mm-hmm. From last year, which is where it premiered at Sundance as well.
Yeah.
I think this film is better. Because for one, this movie has the benefit of fiction going for it.
Yeah.
But it's it has that lace of truth to it. The idea that people who are released from prison really it's hard to get a job and the sort of the catch-22s that they have to go through to get back on their feet.
Yeah.
Where Fruitvale Station had those where you sort of wish that was more of a documentary than a fictional piece or a semi-fictional piece. This one feels more real.
Okay.
And Boyega is really terrific. I was not a big fan of Attack the Block, but this is the kind of performance that's going to get him notices. He's okay. really strong in the film.
All right, cool. That's Imperial Dreams. Did it get picked up or anything?
It hasn't been picked up yet. I'm kind of surprised because the word of mouth was relatively positive. Okay. That was the first movie that I saw.
Okay, cool. All right, we'll take a break, and then we're going to do the not so good.
Yeah.
All right, hold on a second. Eric Childress is with us, and those are the Sundance movies that we've been talking about. He goes to Sundance every year and exclusively gives us a preview of some of the other stuff that he's seen. More coming up right here on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of Tribune Tower. Here till midnight tonight, the very lovely Amy Guth will be joining us at midnight with Red Eye Remake, so stay tuned for that. Eric Childress is covering all the movies that he saw at Sundance this year, and we're getting to the stuff that wasn't so good now. All right, Eric, what do we got?
Okay, I'll get to some of these really quick. A couple of actors made their feature film debuts, the first of which was David Cross, who made a film called Hits.
It's called Hits?
Hits, H-I-T-S.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's a sort of wannabe satire of sort of a small town where Matt Walsh, the great Matt Walsh from Veep, plays a guy that just wants to get, you know, a pothole fixed in front of his house. So, and he can't get the local town council to fix it. He ends up going off on a major rant in front of the council, and that gets picked up on YouTube. And so it becomes a sort of this idea of all the people that sort of unwittingly become stars on YouTube and the people that then want to latch on to that fame. And you have his daughter in the movie wants to get on The Voice really bad, despite having no vocal talents whatsoever.
Okay.
It's a film that seems it's very ripe for satire. Unfortunately, the film it tries to hit so many targets that it never develops sort of a through line through its madness. So for like the first 40 minutes, you're trying to figure out exactly which direction this film is going to take, and it tries to take all of them, and so it becomes this really sort of uneven mess that admittedly has a really, really funny climax. So the climax, which is about 5 minutes of film, is almost worth it, but the 80 minutes leading up to it is really not worth a trip.
Okay. All right. Is David Cross in it?
No.
Okay.
Well, at the Q&A, he's in it, but I guess he does some voice stuff in the movie. He's
okay.
He doesn't play a character in the movie.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right. That's called Hits. All right. What's next?
The other one, the other actor, John Slattery from Mad Men.
Oh, okay.
Directed a film called God's Pocket. And this is a really tremendous cast. It's Philip Seymour Hoffman, John Turturro, Christina Hendricks, Eddie Marzan, Richard Jenkins. The cast alone should get you in the theater. And it's based on this Pete Dexter novel from, I think, the 80s or 90s or something. It wants to be sort of like an Elmore Leonard, Coen Brothers type movie, but Slattery is not really good mastering the tone of this piece. So it starts off as a really kind of a serious drama and then kind of slowly gets into like silly stuff and wacky violence and things. And you really start to appreciate the kind of stuff that the Coen brothers do, that the kind of stuff that they could make this stuff sing. It reminded me when I saw Hits, for example, I thought of how great Bobcat Goldthwait would have done with that material.
Oh, sure.
Like, he would have knocked that out of the park.
Sure.
But here you have a God's Pocket, and it's really just it goes from like it's kind of like watching Mystic River if someone tried to make a black comedy out of it.
Oh boy,
yeah. It has that kind of shift in tone. There's a death early on, and everything sort of revolves around this death. And I can't remember the last time that Richard Jenkins was bad.
Oh no.
Yeah, and I don't think it's his fault. I think it's because of the way his character is sort of wrenched into the movie, and he's sort of right in the middle of these shifts in tone that his character becomes even more buffoonish and idiotic as a result. So it just, every time you see him, you kind of just cringe a little bit, and it was really unsettling. So this is one of the worst movies of the festival.
Okay, God's Pocket, directed by John Slattery. Not good, despite a pretty incredible cast. Okay, what else?
My most disappointing film of the entire fest, and maybe one of the most disappointing films I've ever had at Sundance, is Happy Valley.
Okay.
And this is a film about the Penn State scandal, the Jerry Sandusky rape trial.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it's from the director of The Tillman Story. So going into this film, you sort of expect that he's really going to break down this thing piece by piece in the same sort of investigative style that he did with Tillman Story. You have to reconcile yourself to the fact that he's not going that route, that he's really sort of taken a more, you know, old school Errol Morris type approach where he's just sort of putting up a mirror to this community kind of thing, and he's just letting it, Maisley's, not Morris, the Maisley's brothers, where he's just kind of putting up the camera and showing you how this culture may have allowed this to happen in a way, because they're so gung-ho about football and all this kind of stuff. But at the same time, because the movie really starts to slant itself towards the sort of the hero worship of Joe Paterno, that the movie really becomes kind of an extra layer of insult to the victims of this entire thing, because the main sort of crux of the movie is not, you know, how the victims were damaged or how, you know, the idiots in the society, you know, just wanted to get the football and forget about all this stuff. It becomes whether or not Joe Paterno, how much he knew, what he should have done, what he, you know, what he could have done. By not going into the case, you really don't get the sense of what his role was. And so what they do is they just blame the media. You know, and to just see them, you know, to look at, like, the file cases and they say, like, well, the media took this one line and they ran with it. You know, and it really just becomes sort of a big wet kiss to the Paterno family. And I left the film incredibly angry.
Okay. All right. That's Happy Valley. A documentary about Penn State and what happened there. All right, I guess we're out of time. What was what was the worst movie that you saw at the fest?
The worst movie is a movie called The Foxy Merkins. If anyone knows what a merkin is, just watch the beginning of Killer Joe. As I said on Twitter, I don't think I've seen every, you know, lesbian hooker comedy slash part documentary When Harry Met Sally type movie. But I guarantee you this is the worst one.
Okay. Okay. All right. So again, you're writing about this stuff. Where can people read it? Can they read it at efilmcritic.com or anywhere else?
I don't have anything up at eFilmCritic right now. I've got some stuff up at Rotten Tomatoes. I have reviews up for Wish I Was Here, The Babadook, Obvious Child.
Okay.
Those are all up right now.
All right.
So you can go to Rotten Tomatoes, look those up, and my reviews are there.
All right, cool. All right, Eric, what do we got next week movie-wise?
We got Labor Day, finally.
Yeah.
Jason Reitman's film is coming out. And That Awkward Moment with Zac Efron.
Boy, does that look bad.
And Miles Teller, your boy.
Yeah, well, he's not my boy.
He's your boy.
All right. All right, Eric, thanks a lot, man. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, sounds good.
Eric Childress covering Sundance for us, as he does every year. Quick break here on WGN.